Life is so much more than a diagnosis. It's about sharing time with those you love, hanging with friends who lift you up, and experiencing all those moments that bring you joy. All hits, no skips. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you. So long live singing to the oldies, jamming out to something new, and everything in between.
Monday, it's a new episode of All Rise, the legal drama where one judge is shaking up the system.
When I take the bench, I'm taking a vow to fight for justice.
One case at a time.
Your Honor,
we're going to trial.
Simone Missick is Judge Lola Carmichael.
Up on that bench. Everything is different.
A new episode of All Rise.
Freedom is at stake. It's important.
Followed by a new episode of Bull, Monday at 9, 8 central on CBS.
Panther Talk on the Carolina Panthers Radio Network.
First, I want to give an appreciation to our players. They really worked hard this week. We tried to refocus based on the circumstances that were handed to us. And, you know, we tried to bond together for a victory today, which didn't happen. But overall, I thought the week went well, besides the outcome for today.
And now, along with Jim Soke and Eugene Robinson, here's Mick Mixon with Panther Talk, live from the Panthers broadcast facility at Bank of America Stadium.
I wish to start the show tonight by sharing with you two joters
a
tale that happened to me, Eugene, that I told Zoke and the guys about it on the radio yesterday. And I want your opinion on this, your feedback. I think it has a lot to do with the 2019 Panthers. So on Thursday, I carry my bride to a doctor. So we're there in the female pelvic health clinic, and I walk in, and there, who do I see sitting there but a prominent member of the Panthers D-line from several years ago. So I look at him. I go, "What are you doing here?" He said, "What are you doing here?" And I said, "Well, I got my shorty right here, but you look like you're flying solo." He said, "Well, my wife is in there." I said, "Okay, cool." So we start talking about D-line play.
It's just like Wedding Crashers. Is that the new place to go?
He said something, and it just hit me.
Meatloaf! Go ahead.
It just hit me like a bank safe coming out of the sky. Okay. I should have known it. I should have seen it. But he said, "The problem with stopping the run is that the Carolina Panthers don't have a single D tackle who's willing to consistently drop anchor and play down and dirty, take on double teams, stop the run football. They want to rush the passer. They want to get sacks. They want to get minus yardage plays. They're too quick to jump into a gap. They're too quick to allow themselves to be rooted out of there. And then you got problems. Once one guy slides over or gets pushed out, gets washed out of the play, now everything else is now Luke Kuechly's got, he's not, his world's not normal. The strong safety, the free safety, everybody's on in a bad way.
And I think there's a lot of validity to that because, one, I think the 3-4 hybrid system, I think is somewhat almost geared towards that too, because you have those one-on-one matchups. You can definitely get the nose tackle who would be the first person that would be double team for the most part. They can get that double team, but why double team him when you can go get Luke Kuechly and block him right now? You don't have to get the double team if you don't want to. And so I think some of that is because of the 3-4 system, but I think there's something to it because don't forget, when we had KK Short and that whole crew that was in there 2015, we were in a 4-3 system. And what they've done, those two tackles, they would take up the guards, the two guards, and the center. Luke Kuechly's running free, making tackles from end to end. Now he's not doing that. He's not doing that because he has to avoid a block, take on a block, go under a block, go over a block. And because of that, he's not as effective as Luke Kuechly can be. So I think it's part scheme, and then I think it's part what you were talking about, whoever the defensive tackle was in the meeting, talking about, look, you got to get down and dirty. If you do get a double team, you're supposed to drop anchor, and you're supposed to hold those two guys there so that your linebacker's free to get a run. And I haven't seen that. I haven't seen it at all. I've seen one-on-one blocks where guys are getting pushed out of the way, and the running back has his choice of what gap to take.
And I would assume
it's all recognized here in the building, and that would be one of those top priorities in the offseason. Like last year was, we were 27th in getting sacks, and now we're first. So now you're going to have to like redesign whatever the new coach is going to want in terms of the defensive philosophy, some degree of what you're talking about, whether it's a big old nose guard in a 3-4 or like when Star was here, somebody more like that, to kind of a grinder in a 4-3 defensive tackle.
Because we had a 3 technique. KK Schultz was at the 3 technique, was off, means offside on one of the guards. And then the 1 technique is, it was Star Latulele, and he was on in between the center and the guard, more so close to the center, and he forced a double team. He forced those two guys to double team him, and he would hold his anchor. And then Luke Kuechly would beat those two guys, whoever's supposed to rub double off to Luke Kuechly. He's making a tackle.
Jordan Gross said the same thing. He said, it hurt. I mean, it hurts to be a part of a double team. You know, it's painful. It's a hard job, and a lot of teams are looking for it. But this is what I want to know then. So if you guys sort of agree with the premise of what I heard that made an impression on me about this team. So if here we are in December, and I know we've had injuries, but D linemen, if they're allowing themselves to be rooted out, or if they're not disciplined in their play, if this is continuing to be a problem, whose fault is it?
Well, let's go even maybe not a step further. Let's see what the remedy was they were trying to do. They dropped down into an 8-man front to take away all the gaps, because since that was a problem, they said, okay, let's take away all the gaps, and now we'll be a gap defense, and now you just win your gap. And here's the issue. They got into an 8-man front, and still they were able to run the ball. I mean, 157 yards the other day with the Atlanta Falcons. They ran the ball on an 8-man front, not like a 7-man front or 6-man front, an 8-man front. So that's not so much the scheme and the staff. That's guys getting blocked. That's not you getting off the block to make the tackle. That's what that is. In an 8-man front, the running back is responsible to make one guy miss. And there I saw Devontae Freeman and Hill make two guys miss.
What do you think, Zoe?
And it's between the tackles the last couple of weeks. You know, I keep referring back to that San Francisco game where we're seeing all these, you know, wide sweeping motions and counter moves and jet sweeps and fast little guys. These are teams every week now going, all right, what we've seen of you over the past few weeks is if we run between the tackles and maybe just plow right at you, do a little counter step, whatever it is, we're going to find that one little lane, and we're going to rush through it. And it's just been week after week until you stop it. It's going to keep on coming. And guess who's coming to town this week? Chris Carson and Rashad Penny, and they're going to be doing that. So you've got to figure it out. I mean, I think what you're saying is there's a lot of teams that successfully run a 3-4, and there's a lot of teams that successfully run a 4-3. It doesn't really matter which one. You've got to be, as players, you've got to be able to do and execute what's asked of you.
So to your point, I don't think it's who's to blame if we're looking at the coaching staff of that. I think it's, as a football player, you got to go ahead and man up and own that responsibility and get off the block and win. My coaches always say, don't be a postage stamp.
Coaches can only do so much.
Right? I know. That's, I mean, it. You gotta make that play. I mean, I don't know what else to tell you. I mean, we've all been there. I've got run over. I didn't make that play, and I made that play. That's part of the deal.
Well, we're going to talk to Kyle Love about it. How about that? Get on board the Love train for a little bit. We'll do that shortly. We'll talk to Coach Marty Herney as well. You've been listening to our broadcast roundtable brought to you by GEICO. You go to geico.com, invest a quarter hour, not much time at all, and you will save 15% or more on your car insurance bill. We'll have Coach Perry Fuel in the spotlight when we continue with Panther Talk on the Carolina Panthers Radio Network.
Talk brought to you by Bank of America, official bank of the Carolina Panthers.
Dawkins are strong right, eye backs. Ryan fakes a flip and then throws it left flat to Freeman, who's eaten alive by Thompson.
It came down to us. I mean, they made the right calls. We just got to go out there, like I said, and execute. They put us in position, man. We got to be able to stop the plays, and we just got to go back on Monday, see what we can correct, and just move on.
This is Panther Talk on the Carolina Panthers Radio Network.
Head coach of the Carolina Panthers, Perry Fuel, steps into our Panther Talk studio now to chop it up a little bit about Sunday's game. How does your world change, Perry, when you go from being an assistant coach in the NFL to being the head coach?
Oh, it changes dramatically. There are more people that you have to communicate with.
there are more areas of responsibilities. There's seems like there's always something with 53 men or and eight practice squad guys that is that's going on in their lives, and then you get to the football.
And then the media, a lot of people tugging at your time. Are you worn out after being the head coach on Sunday? Is it physically exhausting?
Sunday, I went to bed relatively early, but I get up early. You're pretty exhausted, but it's a great exhaustion. It's an energy exhaustion more so than anything else. And I'm juiced. I'm excited about this opportunity, and so I can rest later.
Your excitement is contagious. Have you had to let loose of some of your position group responsibilities to be the head coach?
A little. You know, I'm a defensive back guy and by nature, and so, you know, I keep trying to hold on as much as I possibly can, but, you know, I have to let some of the other guys do that, some of that work, so yes.
Well, this game tape, I imagine that you studied on it this morning, did you? And if so, what impressions did you come away with looking at it again?
Yes, I definitely studied our first ball game. I was pleased with our first half. It was a 13-10 ball game. I thought we kind of got in a rhythm offensively. I thought we were playing good defense, except for that, you know, 3 points at the end of half. And then the third quarter happened, and that was disappointing, that our level of focus and our consistency went down to a different level. And so that's what I have to address. That's what I have to do a good job of teaching our players. We have to overcome in order to be successful. We have to play 60 minutes of good football, not 30 minutes or 25 minutes, and we've got to eliminate the mistakes and turnovers.
Coach Fuel, when you met with the team around midday today, what was your message to them in that regard?
It was just that, so that they could see the big picture, you know, because sometimes players only see what they do, and I wanted them to see what we do and how we affect the game in all three phases. So no one person was responsible, no one area was responsible. All three different phases were responsible for the outcome of what happened in the third quarter.
How do you deal with the inevitable bit of responsibility yet not total control that all coaches have to deal with in football?
You control what you can control, and whatever you're responsible for, you handle those situations to the best of your ability. Then you don't worry about what you cannot handle or control, and you just give your opinion, and if that is different than another opinion, then you just move forward.
Harry Fuel, you've been an interim head coach before. Scott Turner getting his feet wet as an O coordinator for you. What'd he give you on Sunday?
Yeah, I thought Scott did a really nice job. He had a good plan. We got down two scores, and then he had to, you know, adjust his plan a little bit. But I thought Scott gave me some runs and some innovation, and I thought he, you know, he tried to get the ball out deep at times to our receivers, and then he tried to, you know, throw the ball to our playmakers underneath with checkdowns, and we've got to continue to get Christian McCaffrey involved, and he tried to get Ian involved a little bit more. And so I thought those were some good, you know, good things that were happening within our offensive scheme. And again, we've got to protect the quarterback and protect the ball.
No doubt. Seattle coming in this weekend. What are the challenges associated with a Pete Carroll-coached Russell Wilson quarterback, Seattle Seahawk Club?
Yeah, you're talking about a veteran coach and a veteran quarterback and a club that has had sustained success over the years that just was defeated, but you know they're in the playoff run, and it's going to be quite a challenge. You know, I think in my mind that we need all of our Panther fans here. They're used to playing in a noisy stadium, but the noise is directed to the opposition. We need to give them a lot of noise. I think our Panther football team needs some love right now. Okay, and I can't emphasize enough how much I want our fans to come out and give us some love so that we can have that extra support that we need from them in order to accomplish this goal on Sunday of winning.
Well said, Coach. Here's our last question. On the radio broadcast, Jordan Gross said, with all the distractions, with all that you and your staff, the players, had to deal with, the result on Sunday wasn't really surprising to him. He predicted, though, the Panthers would play a very tight, very unified game against Seattle. Do you feel the same way?
I definitely feel that. I definitely feel like we can refocus, we can reset the button, that we can come back and play a better brand of football than we played last week. And we're going to play a better brand of football than we played last week.
Sounds good, Coach. Thanks, and good luck to you this week.
Thank you, Mick.
There's a lot to like about Perry Fuel. calm, even demeanor, and he had to deal with an issue that started after the game when it was tweeted out that Dante Jackson, Panther corner, had called into question some of the calls, one of which resulted in, or he was definitely a participant in, a 93-yard touchdown pass on third down and 7. How did that hit you, Eugene, and the Zoke, when you heard and read about those comments?
You want to go first, Zoke?
Yeah, because I want to give you a lot of time, so I'll go quick, because I know you got a lot to say. We actually had this talk on the way walking up here. You can't do that. I mean, I don't even care what level of football. I mean, just you don't call out the coach's plan and then say that was a – he used the word bad twice.
Yes, so he did.
Basically, that was a bad idea, bad plan twice. Your job is to execute the plan. We don't ever compare to the military, but there's generals and there's soldiers, and you're being told what to do and to execute the plan on that play. And I'm guessing there's a lot of times in your career, Eugene, where you didn't like what was called, but you went out and did the coverage. But I just saying that overarching that we know who was at fault there, and I think I want to hear what Eugene has to say about it.
So he's mentioned the 93-yard touchdown. He mentioned it was a blitz third down and 7. They would blitz almost like 8-man blitz. Corners on the island, zero coverage. Okay, zero coverage. The problem with what he's saying is that he wasn't inside the receiver. When the corner's responsibility, his alignment is he should be inside to take away all inside routes on zero coverage. When we see, and we see the film of him running down the field, he's behind the receiver, skinny technique, if you will, looking back at the quarterback. First of all, he's not even doing the proper technique. You learn zero coverage in high school, then LSU, they run a lot of zero coverage, and now you run it in pro. So he already knows what to do. So now he's getting beat because he's out of position, and he's looking back at the quarterback, and he's not even respecting Zacchaeus' speed or anything else. He's taking it for granted. And then he compounds it by not even making the tackle, because he could have actually made the tackle. He compounded it, and then you blame the coaches. No, and I like you, Dante. I think you're supposed to be inside. If you're supposed to be inside, get inside. And if you're really true and you know it, because we're all defensive backs and we know what we know the technique, you didn't even play the technique correctly. And then you compounded things. So that's not on them. That's on you. And then at cover two, that one that and the Ridley touchdown on cover two. On cover two, you're supposed to jam that receiver Ridley inside to make it easy for the safety. I didn't see too much of a jam. And then you're supposed to seek back for the 7 route, the guy who's behind you. They always throw a guy in front of you so that you can get the guy in front of you so they can throw the ball behind you. Well, guess what he jumped? He jumped the guy in front. And then they threw the ball behind. It puts Eric Reed on the island a little bit, and now he scores a touchdown. That's on you. The cover, it says cover two, jam that receiver inside. If you don't jam him inside, he gets outside of you. You roll with him outside, and you take away that because you can always come up, but you can't come back. Those are fundamental things that he should have learned at this juncture, and he have not learned it. It's not the coach's fault. It's not the play calling. It is you're not doing the technique, and that squarely falls on Dante Jackson's shoulders.
Hopefully just a foul ball. Ill-timed comment in the moment. If I was his coach, my tendency would be to want to call him in and say, look, you know, we're all pros. Call me in. Let's get in private. Say whatever you want to. Question the call. We'll talk about it. We'll break it down. Dog cuss me if you want to, and we'll work it out. But don't ever do that again in public.
But, Mick, I would never even do that to the coach. I mean, that's the coach's prerogative to call any call he wants to call. So I wouldn't even be that bold to say, you know, if I disagree with you, I'm not going to even disagree with you. We might have a discussion between some of the players, but we'll keep that amongst ourselves. I'm just going to do what the coach tells me to do because they study so much film during the week. They have a good idea of what to go ahead and do. So I don't even take it that far. I would just keep my mouth shut, and I'll just keep my mouth shut.
We got to go to break, but this is because I would have been a player's coach and you would have been the disciplinarian. Yeah. Your way or the highway. Yes. It all works out. Okay, Zoke, good stuff, man. Take us to a break with the injury update.
I will. Good stuff, Eugene. That was a good breakdown of that. I want to be on Eugene's team, by the way, for picking, like, which coach we're going to get. Injury updates are brought to you by...
You improve!
Ortho Carolina. So that's out of the way. Ortho Carolina Urgent Care Centers. Marquise Haynes with a knee injury yesterday. The only in-game one that stuck as the other players, Addison and Luke Kuechly, returned to the game. When time is of the essence, Ortho Carolina's conveniently located urgent care centers offer orthopedic urgent care for every member of your family. Learn more at orthocarolina.com/urgentcare. Ortho Carolina.
You and improved.
Improved. I'm just going to give you it twice. All right, when we come back, mixed conversation with defensive tackle Kyle Love is on the way as we continue on the Carolina Panthers Radio Network.
This is Panther Talk, brought to you by Coke, official soft drink of the Carolina Panthers.
Fake to McCaffrey. Allen goes to the left. Caught for the touchdown. Left pylon, Ian Thomas.
I mean, just consistency. Just consistency. Keep growing in these small areas and getting better. And as an offensive team in general, too, we got to get some wins and we got to play consistent ball. You know, we've been on a tough stretch for a while here. We really need to turn it around.
Back to Mick Mixon, Jim Silkey, and Eugene Robinson with Panther Talk on the Carolina Panthers Radio Network.
Welcome back to Panther Talk. Mick Mixon with Kyle William Love. What are things like aboard the Love train here lately, young man?
You know, we're just trying to, you know, continue to stay together and, you know, finish out the season the way, you know, we need to do it. And, you know, we need to get to these last three games, get these last three wins, and, you know, finish the season off on a good note, you know. Definitely want to do it for Revere, and we also want to do it for Perry, too. So, you know, just continue to work hard, you know, try to figure out what we can improve on and get better at and get focused and get back to what we do best and, you know, play Panther football.
In what areas, Kyle Love, do you think improvement is most desperately needed?
I don't really know. You know, to be honest, like, you know, you have to work with what you have. You know, everybody has to step up. You know, it's always been the next man up mentality around here. You know, if you're banged up, you guys just play through the, you know, the pain. If you took over for a guy that's hurt, you know, like myself, you know, posed down. So, you know, I had to, you know, step up and play even better than I was already playing. And guys all around have to do the same thing and can't look down on each other or, you know, get down and out and all that good stuff. But just continue to work hard and play for each other at the end of the day.
Kyle, you're kind of known as an effort guy and you're a veteran player too. Have the Panthers struggles against the run this year? Is it personal to you?
It's definitely personal to me because, you know, I've always been known as a run defender. And, you know, I pride myself on stopping the run. You know, we've had a lot of bad situations where, you know, guys are, you know, getting out of the gaps, you know, trying to do somebody else's job. And, you know, we just got to fit up things better, you know. We got three games to correct that, and that's what we need to go out there and do. You know, go back and be Panther defense of, you know, being a dominant stopping the run, force you to throw the ball. And then now when you have to throw the ball, we got great pass rushers. You know, we can get to you that way too. So we just got to get back to the fundamentals and the basis of our game.
Number 77, Kyle Love, our guest on the show tonight. If my math is right on this, Kyle, you just turned 33. Has your NFL career gone by quickly?
I can definitely say 10 years go by really fast. You know, I always used to hear veteran guys say, you know, yeah, man, it seemed like yesterday I was just a rookie. Like, it really does feel like that. Like, my rookie year was 2010, and now it's 2019. 10 years go by so fast. So, you know, I'm hoping to, you know, get a couple more years out of this game if I can. But, you know, that's just how the game is.
You're born in South Korea. Your dad, Anthony, is an Army soldier. Do you have any memories of Asia?
I honestly don't. You know, my mom would tell me stories all the time about, you know, Korean nannies would carry me on their back in these little wrap things and how they would feed me rice and all type of stuff like that. So she had plenty of stories to tell me. I really don't really remember, like, those years of my childhood, you know, moving around and all that good stuff. I don't really remember, but, you know, that's probably why I love, you know, Asian cuisine to this day. So it's one of my favorites.
It would be easy to assume that because you're son of an Army soldier, your upbringing was strict. But how was it in the Love household?
Honestly, my father's wasn't really a strict father. You know, he wanted things done a certain way, obviously. But, you know, he wasn't really big on, you know, making us say, like, yes, sir, no, sir, or anything like that. Even though we did do it, he wasn't big on it. He just wanted us to do well for ourselves, you know, get good grades. If you were competing in some kind of sports, give it your all. you know, whatever you was doing, you know, put your all into it. That's what he was big on. You know, he didn't really like for us to like quit things. You know, if you started something, you got to finish it. You know what I mean? So, you know, that's the kind of dad I had.
So you grew up in College Park, Georgia, right? Or play high school ball there at least, and that's where Cam Newton was from. You're older than Cam, but were you aware of this younger Trigger man roaming around College Park when you were a kid?
Oh yeah, we played against Cam when I was in high school. My high school played his high school, North Clayton High School, played Westlake in the Jamboree almost every year. And I would tease him when I first got here and say, yeah, we used to beat up on y'all, but you know, he thinks the other way around, but it wasn't like that.
Well, we'll let you go, Kyle. One more question. You mentioned these last three games and the pride factor. Seattle's coming in Sunday. What's it like trying to track down Russell Wilson in this Seattle offense?
He's a tough guy to get to. You know, he's one of those guys that can keep the drive going, keep a play going with his feet. Guys will scramble, you know, get open and stuff like that. So I wouldn't necessarily say, oh, you got to contain him. You just got to, you know, when you take your chance, you got to go make the play. So all of us are going to have to work together this week and, you know, rally up to him and try to get him down as quickly as we can to help our guys on the back end.
Always enjoy talking to you. We enjoy watching you play, Kyle Love. Thanks for your time and good luck this week.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
One back, Ingram. And it's Ingram. Ooh, runs into Love at the 15-yard line.
Deal with Love.
Oh, hug a man, Love. Hug a man down.
This player interview brought to you by Jack Black's Men's Skincare, the locker room favorite of your Carolina Panthers. Find it at getjackblack.com, Nordstrom, and Ulta. Stay tuned. Panther Talk continues after this. This is Panther Talk, brought to you by Atrium Health, because you deserve to live your best life, and we're here to help.
As we look forward to next week, we've got to go back as a team and reset. We've got to correct some of the mistakes and some of the errors that we are making. We definitely need our Panther Nation to come out and support us because we've got a real heavyweight football team coming in here, and they're used to a loud crowd, and we need to give them a lot of noise in order to help us be successful on next Sunday.
Panther Talk continues on the Carolina Panthers Radio Network.
That time on Panther Talk when we catch up with the general manager of the Carolina Panthers, Marty Herney. Marty, what's your world been like during a whirlwind last week and a half?
Well, it hasn't been the easiest week and a half, I'll tell you that. It's, seeing Ron Rivera leave, and I think Ron was the same to everybody in this. He's a ultimate pro. He was a good friend to a lot of us, and it's just he understands, and we understand this business and change has to be made. And then you move forward, and you see Perry Fuel step up and really did a great job, you know, during practice in a tough situation, and then Scott Turner taking over the play calling, and I thought. They did a very good job last week, and people are going to look at the score and say, what do you mean? But when you look at what they did, it was just when we got into the game and we did some good things. Just when teams get to this stage, make it this time of year, and you're struggling, and you've lost some close games at the beginning of the year, and then your confidence starts to wane, you get into games, and I think guys are always trying to try too hard sometimes and make the play instead of a play. And then you get to a point in the game where a couple things go wrong and your confidence just goes down. And I think that's what happened to us yesterday.
Going back a little bit in history, correct me if I'm not saying this right, but it seemed like you and Coach John Fox had a good relationship, a friendship, a professional relationship too. Did you and Coach Rivera enjoy the same kind of thing?
Oh, very much so. I mean, I think one of the keys is that your general manager and head coach have to be able to have a relationship. And when I say that, you have to be able to go behind closed doors and have some really hard disagreements and hard discussions, and you can't always agree. And it's not like, you know, when you say you had a good relationship, you always didn't have your arm around each other and saying kumbaya. It wasn't like that at all. It's looking at it from the general manager, looking at it from the personnel point of view, and where we can get the best usage out of our players, and the coach is looking at from the coaching view and where they think guys belong, and then you know, the different personnel moves. And there's a lot of decisions that a head coach and a general manager collaborate on, and I think it's very important that dynamic exists, because it creates a checks and balances within the organization that I think is desperately needed. So both of those guys, I had that dynamic with them, that we could go in, we could disagree, we would, you know, raise our voices at times and get mad at each other at times, and sometimes you went a day without talking, but you got back. And I actually learned that dynamic back when I was with the Redskins and saw Joe Gibbs and Bobby Beathard do that, and they're both in the Hall of Fame right now, so there's got to be something to it.
What you're describing sounds a lot like a family. In some ways, Marty, the NFL is big. It's coast to coast. It's splashy. In other ways, it's intimate, because there's only 32 of us, and you guys all know each other. Coach Rivera may not need your recommendation to get another job, but is it the kind of thing where another team may call you to sort of run the diags on Coach?
I think he's already got probably they've got all the information they need. They know how good a coach he is, you know, it's just, this is the business we're in, Mick, and it's sometimes, you know, sometimes there's change, and sometimes it's you know, it turns out to be good for both parties. It's always hard to see it happen, because this is a people business, really. I mean, from the players on the field to the people in the organization. And I think if you don't have feelings for people, then something's wrong. So, but you also understand that it's a business. Ron understood that it was a business. And he walked out of these doors with the classy demeanor that he spent the entire tenure here. And, you know, I don't think anybody could say a bad word about Ron Rivera.
Just another question or two for our GM, Marty Herney. It's hard to see it now, because the 2019 team is writing its final chapters, but work has already begun on the 2020 Carolina Panthers. Marty, is there an excitement in your mind somewhere about what the future could hold for the franchise?
I think you always, you know, the pain of making the decision with everybody, and you know, from Mr. Tepper all the way through the organization, now our business is to move forward and try to find a way to put the best organization together that we can to consistently win games in the future. And I think that everybody has to have an involvement in that process and dedicated in that goal, and I think that that's what this organization does.
Last question, we'll let you go. It's known that our owner holds you in very high regard. What do you want your role to be in a couple of key hires that confront us moving forward?
Well, I mean, I just feel like I just want to help in any way I can, and I do believe that, you know, I had you know, major impact in John Fox and Ron Rivera. I do believe I have a good feel of spotting head coaches in this league, but you know, whatever Mr. Tepper, whatever this organization needs from me, I'll do.
Do you already know who you want?
No, I think it's a process. No is the answer. I mean, it's you know, again, we just got through the hard part last week, and it's a process, and that you go through, and you get you know, you collaborate with a list of names, and you go through the interview process. And I think that you know, I think the key is you have a list of the qualities of what you want, not only in the person, but how you want the organization to function.
Sounds like you start with a pretty broad net and then work from there, Marty. Thanks for your time, and holler at us if you need us.
Thanks, Mick.
Someone was hollering at Marty.
I was going to say, right till the end there.
Yeah, his phone was. Mm-hmm. Can you imagine the agents? Anything goes wrong in the NFL in a game, and it's so public and so visible that agents are going, hey, I got a guy right now. He's working at a Radio Shack.
Yep.
He's your answer to all your problems. Our visit with Panthers GM Marty Herney, brought to you by FanDuel, proud daily fantasy partner of the Carolina Panthers. How did his comments resonate with you, Jeannie Roth?
I think one of the most impressive things, and I think he said that this is a people business. And he talked about the relationships and how intimate it is. And then when you have to let someone go, whether that be a player or coach, that that's not an easy thing to do because it's a people business. And sometimes I think that we forget that. I mean, I know it's a business and I know it's entertainment and I know it's about winning games too, but there's also the lives that matter. And I think the one thing I can say, it being out of the league for a long time that I've been out of the league, is that the only thing I really remember is the people and the relationships. And I think kind of even as we get over this hump of not having any Coach Rivera, that when you think about it, later down the road, you're like, man, that was a good coach, and man, that was a good relationship, and you'll start to appreciate that even more than what you do now. If
that's kind of life in general, too, really. Yeah, if you indeed. Think about it, you think about the people, and you're right, that's a good way of putting it. And then it's such a subjective business. I mean, you do have analytics, you have your win-loss record, you have all of that. I mean, Bill Belichick gets fired in Cleveland, like this nondescript move, and he goes on to be the greatest coach in the history of modern football. I mean, it's just like, it's subjective. I mean, it's like, who's making the decision and who's making the right decision? And it may not have been that he ever would have been a great coach in Cleveland, but it was the right chemistry and the right fit. And Tom Brady, of course, you got to factor that stuff in. But that's the point, is that you need that combination of things coming together. It's not going to be just, let's hire the right coach. They got to have the right players that yes. fit and hit a quarterback that's going to be around for a long time and carry you. So there's a lot of factors that go into it.
Exactly. And with Coach Rivera, if the Panthers win Super Bowl 50, his legacy's different. His resume is different.
Totally different.
Everything's different. For Dan Quinn in Atlanta, if they win Super Bowl 51.
Yes, totally different.
Up 28-3 in the second half. It's totally different.
If we pick up 2 yards in 2 games, we're, you know, he's still here.
Absolutely. I mean,
you would have been 7-5 going into this instead of 5-7 if you pick up 2. I'm not picking 4 games. Just 2 of the 4 that went down to a yard. You're 7-5 instead of 5-7 heading into last week.
What irritates you the most about the Seattle Seahawks? Would it be their goody two-shoes quarterback? Would it be their gum-chomping, manic, hair-flopping coach? We'll discuss this when we come back with more Panther Talk next on the Carolina Panthers Radio Network. We've got personnel. I mean, offensively, the receivers, Metcalf, Moore, Gordon, Lockett, Brown, Turner. Luke Wilson's a good tight end.
I dare you to call him Decaf Metcalf during the game.
No, that's not how we do it. Nick Ballore at fullback, Travis Horner. Penny got hurt. Chris Carson.
Carson
hurt too?
No.
Carson and CJ.
Did we say Rashad Penny tore his ACL? So that happened.
Yeah. But they've got Russell Wilson.
Yes.
Who could take the sales staff here at the Carolina Panthers and probably put up 30 on a lot of teams. What makes him so good?
His ability to maneuver in the pocket, to get outside the pocket, and still keep his eyes downfield. On receivers, oh, by the way, I can pick up the first down if I choose to. He keeps drives alive. He really does. And then his accuracy with the ball, he throws that ball extremely well. I mean, he's a lot like Drew Brees, that he puts that ball on the money. And his receivers trust him, and he trusts his receivers. And he's always looking to keep the play alive. And he doesn't mind taking the sack and going down. I mean, he's really your complete quarterback, and I want a running quarterback to be able to do what Russell Wilson does, because he keeps things alive and his eyes are always downfield. He would be a nightmare for, if I was back in the day playing, because you don't know what he's going to go ahead and do, and you have to stay on coverage, because if you don't stay on coverage, he's going to beat you.
And he's so good, as you said, and he can go off script.
Yes, he can.
Because that's a maneuverability that you just were talking about, that he can run, but he can also run in the pocket and behind the line of scrimmage and then complete the pass. Like you said, Drew Brees, but like a super athletic Drew Brees.
Yeah.
If Drew Brees could also get out there and run like the baseball player that Russell Wilson was, which is, of course, part of his departure from NC State, was that he was pursuing a potential professional baseball career at the same time.
And don't forget, he's very, very smart. He knows that offense so well that he knows where everyone's supposed to be at, and he's able to deliver the ball and get it there and throw people open. So he has a great command of the offense, and no doubt. So that's why they win. They win because of Russell Wilson, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. All right, so that's part of the equation. The other part is their head coach. We'll address that when Panther Talk continues in just a second.
Hair flopping, gum chewing.
Panther Talk continues on the Carolina Panthers Radio Network.
Don't want to spend a lot of time on this, but am I the only one that's a bit irritated by
No.
the TV camera constantly catches Pete Carroll
No.
and the hair is flopping around? He looks like he looks dazed and confused. I know he's a fine coach. He's got the championship and he's had a great career, but chomping on that gum and what in the world?
So you just don't like him chewing that gum and hair flopping, huh?
Why do we play them so often? We live nowhere near them. We're in a different conference, but I feel like they're like a division rival. I feel like we play them every year.
Every year. It almost feels like every year.
What are we
year.
Doing wrong that we keep ending up with Seattle every year?
And don't forget, that was a good rival because in 2015 we played them. We beat them down then, and that was that little – it was that little seam route by Olsen over the top of Chancellor, I believe it was. And so that turned our season around because they are a marquee team, and you can beat that team. It says something about your team.
Yep.
January of 06, was it the NFC Championship game at Seattle when the Panthers had beaten the Giants on the road, beaten Chicago on the road, went to Seattle? I remember the Zoke and I were walking to the game, and every single person had on Seattle Seahawks sweatshirts and colors.
Yes.
And then we got to the stands, and every single person. There's no dress for success.
No.
There's no the woman that's going to wear the red.
No.
It's just... they all look like extras in a Scorsese film.
Yes.
And I remember thinking, this could be a difficult environment.
And that was an overachieving Panthers team that just ran out of gas. They got as far as they possibly could go and ran into a very good Seattle team that year.
And they take that 12th man thing very, very seriously. I mean, in Seattle, and my years of playing in Seattle, it's always been like rabid fans. They love it. And they do. They all dress alike. They love their team.
I personally know somebody who raised the flag there for the 12th.
Yes, I did. And Jordan Gross got mad at me, too, Jordan. And I got permission from the owner to do it because I wasn't on the
We figured you'd just run over and start doing it.
I'm just going to raise the flag. And Jordan Gross said, what the heck is Gene Robinson doing raising the flag?
Yeah, that loss is on you. We're not taking the blame for that. All right, we got to step aside and got to go. Good show for Jeannie Robb, for the Zoke. It's Mick. You've been listening to Panther Talk on this, the Carolina Panthers Radio Network.
Monday, it's a new episode of All Rise, the legal drama where one judge is shaking up the system.
When I take the bench, I'm taking a vow to fight for justice.
One case at a time.
Your Honor,
we're going to trial.
Simone Missick is Judge Lola Carmichael.
Up on that bench. Everything is different.
A new episode of All Rise.
Freedom is at stake. It's important.
Followed by a new episode of Bull, Monday at 9, 8 central on CBS.